Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, October 17th. We were off last week, but our thoughts still are with the people, communities, and healthcare providers affected by Hurricanes Helene and Milton. We hope you recover soon with the help of the federal government. That's why we pay taxes, to support the common good, and that includes our fellow citizens in time of need. Why do you think we pay taxes? A lot of people are asking the same thing about not-for-profit hospitals and health systems. They don't pay taxes in exchange for providing charitable benefits to their communities. Whether that's right or wrong is the topic of today's show with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, I'm in New York City for the Kane Brothers Annual Healthcare Investors Conference. After a couple of down years for PE investing, the mood in the room is very positive for deal flow in 2025. Let's hope they're right.
Okay. We'll watch that trend. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
I'm in Phoenix, where it's hot and sunny. It was 92 yesterday, which is hard to believe. And, you know, chugging along. It seems like it's been a busy October.
Yeah. You going to get some tennis in?
Maybe. We'll see.
Okay. You brought your racket, though, right?
No. All work, no play, Dave. Come on.
All right. Now, before we talk about hospital tax exemptions, let's talk about these hurricanes. Dave, do you know anyone affected by Helene or Milton, and how did they fare?
Well, right before COVID hit, I attended a conference of the Health Policy Leadership Council that Amitabh Chandra puts together in Asheville, North Carolina, and we happened to have another one of those conferences the week after Helene, and the barbecue restaurant where we had our big group dinner gone. The hotel where we stayed in downtown Asheville had 8 feet of water in it. The devastation is just kind of remarkable, and to see pictures of those sites. And the fact it happened in the mountains far away from the seacoast is also remarkable and a sign of things to come, unfortunately.
Yeah, scary stuff. Thanks, Dave. Julie, you're from Florida. Who do you know that was affected, and how did they do?
Well, I know a lot of folks on the West Coast who were really worried this time in ways that they hadn't been before. But my mom is in South Florida, and she did not evacuate. There was more damage in the Palm Beach County area from tornadoes than from the hurricane. And tornadoes are not a typical thing in Florida. So it was weird.
Yeah, well, I have a number of relatives on my mom's side who live in Florida along the Gulf. Some evacuated, some stayed. They all made it through. And my best story is I do know someone who works in healthcare at a prison in Florida, and the prison staff had to stay at the prison overnight during Milton. So that's a double scary. You know, if the hurricane doesn't get you, the shiv will. But they all made it through, right? And it turned into a great story. So there you go. Okay, let's give some thought to tax exemptions for not-for-profit hospitals and health systems, thanks to two new reports. The first report is a study in JAMA that estimated the value of hospitals' annual tax exemptions at $37.4 billion in 2021. 76% of that came from avoiding federal income tax, sales taxes, and local property taxes. The amount varied significantly by state. From a low of about $25,000 per hospital bed in Delaware, to a high of about $160,000 in Massachusetts. The second report is from Ernst & Young, commissioned by the American Hospital Association. Ernst & Young is now EY for all you cool kids. I'm still wondering what happened to Touche Ross. Anyway, the EY report said not-for-profit hospitals provided a whopping $129 billion in community benefits in 2020, or nearly 10 times the $13.2 billion they avoided in federal income taxes that year. Of that $129 billion, 44.5% came from unreimbursed costs from Medicaid and other means-tested government programs, 28.4% came from community health improvement services like education, research, and donations, and 27.1% came from Medicare payment shortfalls and bad debt. Dave, first, that $37.4 billion in the JAMA study sounds awfully familiar,
yeah,
like a number you came up with. Tell me about that, and then give me one good reason why we should tax or not tax not-for-profit hospitals.
Well, tax exemption for hospitals has been a burr under my saddle for quite a while, as you know, Dave. And in 2020, the Harvard economist I just mentioned, Amitabh Chandra, and I did some research and wrote an article on what the real cost of tax exemption was for hospitals, for tax-exempt hospitals in foregone tax revenues. And the number we came up with was $40 billion, slightly higher than the JAMA study. I think the reason we're a little higher than they are, our base number was $35 billion, and then we added another $5 billion for foregone tax revenues related to non-operating income from investments, capital gains, and asset sales. That's pretty hard to track. And my guess is there's some of that that the JAMA study missed that would push the number probably above $40 billion right now. Anyway, you slice it, it's a big number. I happen to know one of the JAMA study's authors, Gi Bai. Julie, I don't know if you know her or not, but from Johns Hopkins. And she's an accountant by background and a real stickler for detail. And you might remember a couple of years ago, one of her colleagues at Hopkins, Gerald Anderson, published a study that said the cost of tax exemption was $60 billion. So a full 50% more than where Gi is coming out. And I remember talking to her about it, and she took exception to how he was interpreting many of the numbers. So I had enormous respect for her then and an equal amount today. Your second question, Dave, is one good reason for either, you know, taxing or not taxing hospitals. And, you know, I come down in favor of taxing. So any economist will tell you if you want less of something, you should tax it. It's not that complicated, right? When you tax something, people buy less of it or provide less of it. We have an overbuilt acute care infrastructure system. If we want less of that, we should tax it. And the great thing about that is we could apply some of these foregone lost revenues, the 40-ish billion dollars, which is a huge number. It's almost the equivalent of what new hospital construction costs each year. We could use those proceeds, in part at least, to fund transformation. So more health, so we need less healthcare. So that's where I would go with my one good reason. We want less healthcare, fewer hospitals, more investment in health. Let's use the tax policies of the countries to support that goal, not what we're doing today, which is needlessly supporting expansion of the current acute care footprint in the country.
Right. Sounds like a good idea, but higher taxes haven't stopped people from smoking, right?
Oh, yeah, they have. You know how much a pack of cigarettes costs these days, Dave?
I have no idea.
It's over $10 and it's like 95% taxes.
Oh, that's great. That's a good analogy. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Yeah, Dave. You know, in a policy brief from the Loan Institute, they suggested remedies including establishing minimum thresholds for hospital community benefit spending, requiring more detailed tax reporting, and adopting intermediate enforcement actions like financial penalties for noncompliance. Do you have thoughts on these?
Well, I love the Loan Institute, and for over a decade, they've been a remarkably strong voice. I think they're headquartered in Boston, but a remarkably strong voice for social responsibility and high-value care. So I think anything that they produce is worth paying attention to. These particular solutions, I think, aren't bad. They're regulatory in nature. They're incremental. They would move the ball forward. But as I was just talking about, I think we need an exponential solution, which would be, you know, taxing all providers and redirecting monies toward the Loan policy's goals of better access, social responsibility, high-value care, eliminating unnecessary care, and so on. And one thing I didn't mention in my previous answer sort of supports this idea of being more dramatic, and Dave, you had this in your synopsis, at least some of it, is that the benefits of tax exemption are massive and unevenly distributed. So 7% of the hospitals account for half of that cost of tax exemption. And the top 1%, which is 29 hospitals, accounted for 19%. So when we're talking about kind of doing away with this, we're really going at the bigger, more established names. And they're the ones who that are in the best position to afford it. Obviously, the burden would fall disproportionately on hospitals in low-income communities, and we should have programs in place if we do move in the direction I'm talking about to redirect funding into these communities with the goal of improving health broadly, not just increasing access, although increasing access is obviously very important too.
Yeah, it's how you use the tax revenue. Thanks, Dave. Julie, Dave mentioned the AJ report at the end of our October 3rd show. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I heard you say the word cheating. What's your take on the AHA report? And then give me one good reason why we should tax or not tax not-for-profit hospitals.
That wasn't nice of me, was it?
But it was accurate.
Yeah, sure.
He's got the recording, Julie. That's right. He can nail us at any time.
I have to be careful. So.
I didn't edit it out.
I have to be more careful. You know, this is a tough issue, despite how black and white every report makes it look, or even sometimes how we talk about it here, right? And I don't know if you saw this, Dave, but one of the Northwestern policy researchers said something that is so true. It's how you do the math and what you're counting. Like, no duh. So the AHA hires EY. By the way, Deloitte Touche Touche Ross is now at Deloitte Touche, Dave.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But the AHA hires EY, who's using an accounting, that's more favorable to hospitals versus JAMA or Lown or, all these other calculations. You literally can't win. So, I look at this like hospitals run on 1-2% hospital margins. And honestly, if given the choice, I would not willingly get involved in a business like this. Like it's not an attractive business. So, the issue, I guess, for me is the way the taxation issue impacts others is what really kind of riles me up. So I chose to look at how the IRS tax breaks impact some of the headline issues that we talk about and other organizations outside of healthcare. And it's unfair all around. The IRS will not provide similar tax breaks to direct primary care or other innovative care models that promote prevention. And they absolutely will not do this. Now, many of those organizations are for-profit, but I'd have to imagine that if they actually provided tax breaks, you'd see more preventative health and healthcare organizations grow up in the nonprofit space. It's simply not happening. So that's number one. Number two, the IRS warned Americans that they cannot use HSA funds to buy healthy foods as directed by their doctors, despite the linkage between healthy food and health and the continued challenges we have with access to healthy food and food deserts. And when you look at these last two examples with primary care and healthy food, this is coming at a time when, chronic diseases are the leading cause of death in the US, and by the way, super expensive too. And it's as if the IRS is supporting sick care rather than health. That's absolutely what they're doing. So second thing I also looked at is when I look at the business model, it's easy to see salaries of many, but not all hospital execs as extraordinarily high. And according to public tax records in 2022, Cedars-Sinai had an income surplus of $750 million and Memorial Sloan Kettering of $400 million. Neither paid federal taxes. The top three hospital administrators made nearly $20 million in salaries at these organizations. So that, is the IRS effectively contributing to outsized earnings by some of these executives? And frankly, supporting major wage gaps, perhaps. And last, I'll turn to what I think is actually most deplorable. The impact to organizations like our public schools. In 2023, a Pennsylvania judge revoked a hospital's property tax exemption after the Pottstown School District sued the hospital, arguing that its special tax treatment resulted in $900,000 less revenue for the school each year. This is because of avoidance of property tax. So this is when I really start to question the tax treatment. Like when we're stealing from education to pay healthcare, what are we doing? So you know, I'd like to see the tax treatment redefined to support health and not steal from other important organizations like education, and maybe come with strings related to actually driving down costs. And I know that that is out of, you know, IRS hands to do things like that last bit, but it's pretty clear to me that hospitals are getting a pretty good deal.
Yeah, what do they call it? Payment in lieu of taxes, I think, when they make those settlements in Pennsylvania and elsewhere. Thanks, Julie. Great analysis, especially the IRS stuff. I did not know any of that. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Yeah, any way you look at it, it's pretty ugly. Among my favorite aphorisms, Julie, is hypocrisy is the tribute vice pays to virtue. I actually have that hanging on a little needlework sampler from the 1800s in my office. So given that relationship between vice and virtue, do you know anyone, I mean anyone, that's persuaded by the AHA's report, I guess, which is the ENY report funded by the AHA, that the community benefit provided by tax-exempt hospitals is multiples higher than the foregone tax revenues that society provides these organizations, as you were just describing, to support their operations? And if not, and I'd be surprised if you do, but if not, and I don't mean to be overly cynical, why does the AHA bother to engage in this annual ritual in misinformation and in the process invite accusations of hypocrisy? Is there any lost virtue amid these mountains of vice?
Well, first, Dave, you had me at needlepoint. That's cute.
We'll do a show on what we have hanging on our walls. That would be an interesting show. Yeah.
Well, Dave, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, but this is the age of disinformation, right? I mean, we swim in it. We love it. It's disgusting. So, I mean, the AHA undoubtedly looks at this as third-party validation that they and their members, and most importantly, their army of lobbyists can use to just continue marching on. And, you know, this is just the way it works. And as a former CPA, auditing hospitals is the first thing I ever did in my career, and studying like crazy cost accounting and all the things that hospitals just don't do well, there will never be a right answer. So it pays for AHA to continue to surf the gray waters.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they have to get their voices heard. So I hear you. Thanks, Julie. Now, as a Cub reporter, I covered this tax exemption issue pretty extensively. Someday I'll tell you about the story I wrote about HCA under Rick Scott, claiming that paying taxes is equal to providing charity care. And for that story, I interviewed owners of a strip club, a gun club, and a liquor store for the story.
Wow,
and since we are recording, and for the record, I did those interviews over the phone. So there you go.
Impressive.
When you guys get a little older, I'll share it with you. Anyways, let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. It wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, I noticed another article about Ascension unloading some hospitals and some other potentially underperforming services to Prime Health. At least 9 hospitals they sold to Prime Health. So, you know, Ascension, Tenet, and maybe others are, you know, continuing to quietly unload poor performing assets.
Yeah, it's like a game of hospital monopoly out there right now.
Yeah.
Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
You know, as I mentioned, I'm at the Healthcare Investors Conference at Cain Brothers, and one of the mainstays every year is a really good private equity panel, and yesterday's panel was no exception. But it's interesting kind of listening to how that dialogue unfolds, and it's a lot of very deep assessment of the relative leverage that sectors have, the various healthcare sectors have over one another. You know, for example, providers getting the better of payers in this MA debate that's unfolding, the inability of specialty pharma to really deal with PBMs. And meanwhile, yet all around the conference are dozens of companies making strategic long-term bets on value, consumerism, improving health outcomes, all the things we talk about all the time. And it's a little bit of a jarring contrast. And when asked about it, Anna Hokiui from Valtrius, who's fantastic, just made the comment that she thinks we're close to the tipping point. But she said, I've been saying that for 5 to 7 years. So at what point do we get enough of this activity in enough scale that it really fundamentally begins to change supply-demand dynamics so we don't have to debate the relative positioning of payers versus providers anymore? We can start talking about how do we deliver better outcomes at lower cost with better customer experience and better overall population health. Hallelujah to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's good for customers is good for business, right? So sounds like we're finally headed in the right direction. Thanks, Dave. And thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.